It's time for the Las Vegas Sports Line. Brought to you by the Westgate Las Vegas, home of the world's largest race and sports book and the Super Contest.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
And here we go. It's the Tuesday edition of the Las Vegas Sports Line. I'm Dave Koch, and Wes Reynolds is in on Tuesdays and Wednesdays each week. Jared Justice is here just about every day of the week producing this show. It's Tuesday. That means the show's brought to you by the Westgate Superbook USA, and Jeff Sherman will join us in a little while. So discussion in the studio before the show started with Jared, Wes, and myself on the rather obvious decline of Phillip Rivers, where the Chargers go from here, and is Phillip Rivers a Hall of Famer? Wes, I'll let you weigh in first on this.
I think he's right on the precipice. He's kind of in the what you would call the Hall of Very Good, for sure.
I like that.
But he's like really, really close, I think. Honestly, if you really look at the numbers and whatnot, I think he's a better quarterback than the guy he's always compared to from the same class, Eli Manning. Yep. But Eli Manning has the rings, and his last name is Manning, and he played in New York.
Yes.
So those are three things working in his favor. But, yeah, it's tough to see that decline because the guy has won a lot of big games, and he's been a really, yeah, I think, underappreciated quarterback for a long time.
Yeah, people are getting on him now, and he's played very poorly this year. I don't care how many passing yards he's thrown for. He just has not played well. But to me, that doesn't tarnish his career. He's had a really good career. And this is interesting because I actually don't think Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. I think he was the product of two Super Bowl wins, one of which was extraordinarily fortunate, but it counts. And I think he's been, like Rivers, a very good quarterback, but not a Hall of Famer. To me, there's only one, and I know there'll be a lot of disagreement with listeners on this, but to me, the only Hall of Fame quarterback for me out of that class is Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, without question.
I don't think there's much question he's the best of that bunch. And the other two have been outstanding, just not quite to Hall of Fame level. But I'm also not going to go crazy if either one of them gets, one or both, gets in the Hall of Fame. Because, you know, it's just a matter of opinion. It's a bit of a beauty contest.
And mm-hmm.
I get a lot more worked up over one winner or one loser on a bet than I do as far as the Hall
right.
of Fame goes, because I really don't care much.
They wouldn't be egregious selections
no.
to Canton by any stretch of the imagination where it's like, oh, it's an outrage. I mean, it's not like Injustice, our producer, brought up Tony Romo over the break, and he just didn't play long enough
right.
for me and didn't start in the league long enough, even though he
no,
put up very good
honestly,
numbers.
No, and quite honestly, didn't win any big ones.
Right. Right, so he's kind of, I think, the quintessence of the Hall of Very Good, if you will.
Yeah. All right, and as for the Chargers, their season is now over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could win out, but 9-7 is not going to get you to the playoffs in the AFC. So we'll see what the Chargers do. Do you entertain any possibility they go to one of their other quarterbacks down the stretch just to see what he can do?
I mean, I don't know. It depends. I mean, there was a debate I saw on Twitter last night of whether they're going to get rid of Phillip Rivers. I mean, they really need to draft for the future.
Oh, no question.
And get a new quarterback. But it's one of those things where a guy's played for your organization his entire career. How do you want to do the exit?
Right.
Because obviously there can be a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of emotions tied
well,
to that.
I think they'd need to clear it with. I think they'd need to clear it with Rivers first.
Right.
And see
right.
what he thinks.
Right, and you know, I'm sure he's a prideful guy, and he knows that his skills are diminishing. So, I think that they've gotta get somebody, because I just think that or that team needs a lot of life. And if you recall last year, it seemed like the Chargers finally got all the breaks
yeah.
and won all the close ones. This year, they're losing all the close ones. I think Stats by Stats on Twitter had an interesting tweet last night about the fact that the Chargers are the first team to lose seven games in, like, the first 11 weeks by seven or less points.
And I hate
they're losing all the close games.
I hate to pin the responsibility on one guy because that's more than one guy.
Mm-hmm.
But Rivers has been kind of the culprit in at least two or three of those losses where he's he's basically lost the
right, because you look at that team, and they do have talent. I don't think there's a deficiency of talent on the Chargers roster, especially on defense. When you can put Bosa and Ingram together, I mean, that's arguably as good of a pass rush duo as you have in the league. They've just had a lot of injuries, especially on the offensive line. Whoever they get for quarterback, they're going to need to shore up offensive line as well.
No doubt about that. UNLV in the win column last night at home against Abilene Christian in a game heard right here on ESPN Las Vegas. Rebels pick up their second win of the season. Abilene Christian, not much, but you want to take care of business against those opponents. They did so. Texas State comes in tomorrow. This game will be a little more of a challenge. Texas State is basically about the same level right now as UNLV. The Rebels will be a small favorite in the game, I'm anticipating. I haven't looked. I'm sure the numbers are up. I'm anticipating 3 or 4. And this, to me, is one of those games you want to get because it's a team at your own level.
Yeah, and Texas State, a pretty good defensive team. That coach is really good, Danny Caspar.
Yeah,
I remember,
yeah.
I believe he was at Stephen F. Austin before that in the Southland, and always a really grinder of a defensive team, slow the tempo a little bit. But it got dicey a little bit in the second half. Abilene made a run, but a nice win for UNLV after they played that murder schedule to start the season.
I think that schedule will do them some good. I like lesser teams playing. I'm not advocating a Long Beach State schedule that Monson had for years, where they played 13 straight, you know, ranked teams and just defeated the team's psyche completely. But you want to get some good, tough, early opponents in, and I think they did that, and I think that might help them as they get closer to Mountain West play.
Yeah, you don't want to go the Mike Davis at Texas Southern route where they're playing every ranked team in the top 25 in the preseason.
Making a lot of money.
Yep, and you get to your level once you get into conference play. It's like, okay, we played better teams. These guys are no sweat.
But you also don't know how to win,
and
I think that can hurt.
And you could beat your kids down like Dan Munson, I think, has done for years at Long Beach State.
Jeff Sherman joins us every Tuesday right about this time from Superbook USA. You can follow Jeff on Twitter at GolfOdds. Howdy, Jeff. How are you?
Excellent. How's it going, guys?
Good. I'm anticipating that because the bettors had a good week, that the consensus might have had a good week in Super Contest. Was that the case?
Yeah, consensus went 4-1, so it rebounded. It had a tough couple weeks before that, but did well last week, and right now, the Super Contest leader is 38-16-1, so hitting 70.4%. In the gold, it's 34-19-2 at 64%.
Let me just, obviously, there's no betting on this, but if you were to put 70% as the over and under, we're only a little past halfway, and only a couple of guys over 70, or a couple of entries, I should say, over 70%. Would you say anybody will finish over 70, or do you think this is a year where it'll be a little less than that wins it?
I think it's going to come out a little bit less. If I had to make a price, I'd probably make the under about $2 under if you made it 70.5% or 69.5%.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you're looking right in that neighborhood. All right, let's talk. Let's get right into the NBA, and because we've got four games tonight, some interesting matchups. So let's talk about them. The Blazers and Pelicans. Opening things up, I mean, New Orleans, we're just waiting for the guy to get on the court. The Blazers, I'm not sure what to make of them so far. And granted, I don't watch a lot of NBA, but I thought this team was going to be better than they've been, and it seems like the defense is the culprit.
Yeah, they've really been struggling, and tonight they're going to be without Damian Lillard. He's got back spasms, so he's going to miss the game. So this line went from Portland -3 at New Orleans to now New Orleans -1. So a tough spot. Portland's been struggling. They do have Carmelo Anthony active now.
Oh, that's right.
That's going to improve that defense exponentially in Portland.
His number is 0-0, so I'm wondering if that's how many points he expects to score. So it's we'll see how he fits into this. But, you know, they need some help at the small forward position. They're going to try this. And what they're hopeful is that they get him in a role like Dwight Howard's been for the Lakers and accept that role. And if you can do that, then you get some production out of it rather than him wanting more than what he's capable of doing. So no Lillard tonight, but Carmelo there, and right now it looks like a little disarray, and it's moved to New Orleans -1.
Golden State and Memphis, the other semi-early game, 5:05 tip-off Pacific. D'Angelo Russell, no go, out indefinitely with a thumb injury. Pelicans, the young Grizzlies, rather, laying 6 here to Golden State.
Yeah, we opened this one Memphis 6.5, and we've seen some early sharp play on Golden State +6.5. We're down to Memphis -6. First half, 2. They took the Warriors +3.5. So little bit of leeway. They might be thinking a young team like Memphis here laying a healthy amount of points for themselves, even though it's against a really beat-up Golden State team.
Suns are in action tonight. Their last game against the Celtics, I would say, was not not one of their great efforts.
Brad Stevens as an underdog is a pretty good bet,
isn't he? I'll
tell
you that. They'll take on the Kings tonight. You know, well, Sacramento's where they typically are in the standings. But, you know, at home, in conference play, they always seem to compete hard. They just don't get there.
Yeah, and Sacramento's still without De'Aaron Fox, but the last couple games they played really well. They almost won at the Lakers, and they ended up beating the Celtics by one the other night, held on with a shot just off the rim by Marcus Smart. So Sacramento's been playing tough lately, and Phoenix is on a back-to-back. Ricky Rubio's questionable. Aaron Baines is questionable for Phoenix. So this should be a good team with two teams you expect to see on the rise the next couple of years.
Thunder and Lakers, the nightcap on NBA TV tonight. And this is a game I don't know what to do with because I would initially want to lean with taking the 11 against the Lakers because, I mean, the prices are going to be taxed so high with their great start of 11-2. But I watched that Thunder-Clippers game, a lot of that game last night. They put a ton into that game last night because it was clearly a lot of personal revenge-type games. Chris Paul and Gilgeous Alexander, former Clippers, now with the Thunder, and, of course, Paul George playing his former team. And you can tell kind of when you have those first games against your former teams, the teams really play good defense. And it was a very low-scoring game last night. Clippers able to pull it out. Lakers lay in 11 tonight to the Thunder.
Yeah, and the Lakers here with a fortuitous scheduling spot again. The other night they played the Hawks when the Hawks played against the Clippers the night before. Now the Lakers get the Thunder off the Clippers the night before. So the Lakers' 11-2 start has a lot to do with the schedule that they've seen so far, and you know that's why they're laying a thick number tonight. The Thunder, normally, I could see this line a little bit less, but just the spot that you had mentioned with the back-to-back and an emotional game last night, it's a tough one to handicap with the 11.
So let's talk about the Lakers for a moment. I watched them the other night against the Hawks, and granted, as you said, positive scheduling situation. But, you know, as I watched the game, they look like a team that, whenever Atlanta made a little run at them and they got it down at, you know, 10 or something, the Lakers said, just get out of here. And then, you know, they'd run it back out to 18 or 20. Where are they now in terms of what you anticipated they'd be? And what is this team going to look like at the end of the season? How serious are they to win the whole thing?
Well, you know, the runs that stopped the other night, that was all due to LeBron. Every time he put his foot on the gas, it got them back with a lead. And you know, he's playing with a chip on his shoulder this year after his injuries last year and what people were saying about his defense. But the biggest takeaway I can have so far with what I've seen with the Lakers is this team really enjoys playing together. There's really good chemistry on this team, and we haven't seen that out of a Laker team in many years, even though they've tried different situational players, things like that. But they're really enjoying playing together. Dwight Howard's really accepted that role, and he's been a real positive when a lot of people were leery about him coming into the team and he could affect chemistry. So far, so good, but they've had a good scheduling situation. It's going to continue. They really have a soft schedule up until they hit December 3rd. They play back-to-back against Denver and Utah. That's going to be about as tough as you can get in the NBA. And when they get through the December schedule all the way till Christmas Day when they play the Clippers, we'll see what this team's really made of. But so far, the Lakers and the Celtics have both benefited from easy scheduling situations.
What's the future price on the Lakers now in... And we know that line is there's bias in favor of the Lakers always, so you have to shade the line that way. So what's the actual future price, and what would be your true future price on them?
Well, we have them at 5-2 right now, and what I think they should be is probably about 5-1. I think, you know, there's a handful of teams, about 5 or 6 teams, that really have a shot to win it. But as we've been talking this through the last couple of weeks, we've looked ahead at their schedule, and with it being so soft, we said this team could really start out 17-2 if things went right. So we have to keep their number low because with that record, people are going to be looking to bet on them. And when the schedule gets tougher, if we see some losses along the way like we expect to see, we could ease them out somewhere in between what they are now and what they should be.
Yeah, the whole key is Anthony Davis staying on the court and being healthy come playoff time. They figure to have just about as good a chance as anybody if he's healthy, but that's never a sure thing with him. I do think that they're probably doing a good job of monitoring LeBron's minutes so that he doesn't have to overly extend himself in the regular season. That seems smart. And you know what it'll be like around this town if the Lakers are are really in the thick of it come playoff time, it'll be nuts.
Well, yeah, and that'll really help out with the handle in the sports book. If the Lakers are involved in the playoffs, they haven't seen them in so many years, and especially with a LeBron and AD-led team, that it'd be by far the most bet games of the night.
VGK at home tonight and off a really nice win on Sunday, 6-0 over the Calgary Flames. Probably, arguably, might have been their best performance of the year.
I think it was, and I've been hopping on this for the past week or two, and believe me, I'm not saying that I'm the reason it happened, but Jared can attest to this. I said this team's got to start using their size advantage. They're a big team. And start banging the opposition around. And boy, did they ever do that against Calgary on Sunday. They were extremely physical and played with a chip on their shoulder and played angry. And tonight they've got a badly reeling Toronto team coming to town. And I hope they do the same thing. Come out nasty right from the outset. This is the Golden Knight. That's the type of team this Golden Knights team needs to be, Jeff.
Yeah, they need to, and they need to do it over this next week because they got Toronto tonight, San Jose at home on Thursday, and Edmonton at home Saturday. So it's actually a really big week in the season for them, especially coming off the losses that they had. So if they want to turn things around, they can do it against some actually quality competition here ahead of them. But tonight's game, you know, we opened this one, the Knights $1.40. It got up as high as 60, and then we saw some sharp play on Toronto. They took Toronto +140. Also at +1.5 goals. So they're fading the public with tonight because the public is still on the Knights.
I'm probably not going to play it, but I'd side with the public tonight. Toronto is a mess right now. Something's going to happen in the next 2 weeks. Either they're going to make a big trade or they're going to fire the coach. The way it works in the NHL, and I followed the league for about 100 years, so this is generally the way it works, is if it's a veteran coach, the team will usually try and make a notable trade, and if that doesn't spike the team, then they fire the coach. So I'm expecting this reeling Toronto team to pull the trigger on something. It wouldn't surprise me if Tyson Barrie gets traded, because that trade is not working out well right now for the Leafs. But none of my money going on Toronto right now, let me put it that way. That team's running really bad right now.
Yeah, what if they lost 4 or 5 in a row, something like that? And it's been a tough go. I think their last win was against the Knights up in Toronto.
I believe that's right, yep.
It's tough for them. They had higher expectations coming into this year. And, you know, the way that Toronto's going and the way the Knights were going too, I thought if the Knights didn't correct this like they did on Sunday and over this next week, then things could have happened with them. And we've seen some line changes out of the Knights, and I expect the same type of lines that we saw in Sunday's game, since it worked so well, to go into tonight.
I just want to see more of that physical play. Knock them around. Let's talk a little golf. What an unusual occurrence, as a player who had never won, and I think about a year ago at this time, might have still been on the Korn Ferry Tour. Brendan Todd goes back-to-back. How about that, Wes?
Well, he did win several years ago. He won the Byron Nelson down in Dallas.
Okay.
But I was wanting you to bring that up because this is a guy that over a couple years had missed 37 of 41 cuts. He got the yips, not in his putting stroke, but really in his full golf swing, and just fell apart. He fell outside of 2,000 in the world in terms of his rankings. Gets his card back on the Korn Ferry Tour, wins back-to-back, and four guys since 2000 have won three consecutive events on the PGA Tour. So it's Dustin Johnson, Vijay Singh, Rory McIlroy, and Tiger's done it 5 times since 2000.
I'm not putting Todd in that category.
No, he's not
winning 3 in a row.
But yeah, I think he's 40-1 this week to win the RSM Classic. He goes back to Georgia. He lives in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So a lot of Georgia Bulldogs here in this field. Webb Simpson, tournament favorite, currently at 10-1, but really, a lot of, like, very good players in this field and no elite players this week.
Yeah, and that's what we're faced with this being the last full field event of the PGA Tour season. They're off next week. Then they have the limited field Hero World Challenge leading up to the President's Cup. So this is your last opportunity to get 156 golfers playing. It's not that strong of a field. Webb Simpson, like you mentioned, 10-1. Billy Horschel, 16. Matt Kuchar, 20. So you really got to go down the board and try to find some gems out of that. I mean, the only one that I can pinpoint this week based on some course form is Russell Henley. I don't like his current form, but he's tended to show up on courses he's done well. So he had a run of 3 top 10s in a row on this course, and That's the only way I could lean in the 40 to 50 to 1 range.
He was one of my plays this week too, and he loves the Bermuda greens. So this is his preferred surface. He's also a Georgia Bulldog, one of many Georgia Bulldogs in the field this week. So those guys have tended to do well in this tournament. But Jeff, really quickly too, Race to Dubai in terms of the standings is probably over. Bernd Wiesberger would have to finish near the bottom of the field to lose the point standings. But in terms of the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai, Rory McIlroy, the favorite, 4-1. It's really hard to oppose him, but it's one of those ones where you got to take a stand, even though he's won two big starts here in his last six starts, won the Tour Championship in Atlanta, and then won the WGC in China a few weeks ago. What are you seeing in terms of the final European Tour event of the season?
Yeah, we have McIlroy, the 4-1 favorite, and Rahm at 6.5-1, and it's a limited field, obviously the last one with 50 golfers in it, and action's been a little bit light so far, a little bit more on matchups, and the marquee matchup is McIlroy against Rahm, and I priced that one at McIlroy $1.45, and I could see fading Rahm this week because when he's come off of long layoffs like he's had, he hasn't jumped in too well. He's usually a streak player, and he's sitting off a little bit of a layoff here, so I don't expect too much out of him, and I could see McIlroy finishing the year on a strong note.
Jeff, let's look ahead a little bit to the President's Cup. How does that do in terms of volume compared to the Ryder Cup? And what are you going to have available this year as far as the President's Cup is concerned?
Well, our volume, it ends up being about one-fifth of what we do on the Ryder Cup.
I wonder why that is.
It just doesn't have the prestige and the history that the Ryder Cup does, so people don't get involved in the same way. And you don't have the players, the European players that people are used to. It's a lot of players from just the other parts of the world, which comprises the team. So there's more familiarity with the European players following the European Tour a little bit. But we'll have the standard stuff that we do for the Ryder Cup with the top point score, the daily matches. With the time difference, we might not be able to have the turnaround times available. I think it goes through the middle of the night, and that's mid-December with this. But, we'll have the standard standard wagering offerings for it, but don't expect too much because it's right smack in the middle of football season too, and sometimes you get the Ryder Cup at the start of football season and people are still in the golf mode, and right now it's more of the sillier off season in golf, so you really see a lot less handle in it.
And you also have an international team that's a big underdog here with a lot of first-time players on that team for Ernie Els.
Yeah, and then, questionability about Brooks Koepka. It sounds like he's doubtful to play himself. So, there's just, I don't see people getting too invested in this, especially, like I mentioned, the time of it, too, is right in the middle of the night.
I love that because it'll be on the Golf Channel, and I'll be up in the middle of the night watching it. And if Koepka's not going to play, I sure hope Tiger Woods put Kevin Na on. Kevin Na rates a spot on the team.
See, I'm pulling for Colin Morikawa. I would go with a young guy with energy. I think one of these young guys deserves it. He's actually playing over in Japan this week, and he's a 7-1 choice in the Dunlop Phoenix. And if he can perform well and maybe win that one, I think he could be a good replacement.
Yeah, but Kevin Na lives here.
The pride and joy of Southern Highlands.
I'm a homer, and he won the tournament this year. And actually, won, what, two or three times this past year?
Yeah, he's won, I think, three times in the last 30 months.
He's gotten past – in fact, I'll mention Kevin Na for a second, because – and I'm dead serious about this. He's gotten past the – Jeff, we know how bad he was on Sundays, where he would lose leads, and he's gotten past that. And I think I don't know if it's his type of course, but if the U.S. Open is on a shot maker's type of course where he can excel, he'll be out there at a pretty good price. I might throw a flyer on him. I mean, he just seems like a different guy, totally relaxed now, having fun out there.
Having that kid, I think, absolutely helped him. And sometimes golfers are funny. When they finally get married or have children, it totally changes them and it relaxes them. We'll see if that'll work for Ricky Fowler if he can finally win a major next year. He's finally gotten married.
You put Na on a course where it's, you put the ball in the fairway and it's not a real long course. He's dangerous.
Yeah, and I agree with you and respect that his win out here in Vegas, the field was fantastic. So if you're going to get past that and have to beat a quality field like a U.S. Open, this was a pretty solid non-major field that we had out here in Vegas.
We've got a big fight this weekend. It's a rematch, Ortiz and Wilder. And when I checked this morning at Superbook USA, Wilder was -650. And I think that's probably a good price, but it's also a price where I'm sure you're going to get a lot of money on the underdog.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of two-ways so far on this. We opened Wilder -650 and got up to $7 with 5-1 on Ortiz, and at 5-1 we took some underdog money. So back to minus 650 plus 450 right now. Good two-way on it. But most of the action on these fights comes on fight day.
Right.
We'll see some underdog support show up for this. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are hoping Wilder wins because we already have a price up on Wilder Fury, which is expected to be out here in Vegas on February 22nd if Wilder can win this fight. And that fight would be a monster fight for this town.
Oh, boy, whatever.
Tyson Fury, of course, coming off his big showdown in Saudi Arabia for WWE against Braun Strowman, where he got a nice paycheck to perform in front of the prince.
Marcus Strowman?
Braun Strowman in WWE.
Is that Marcus Strowman's brother?
It is not.
Okay.
It is not.
I know baseball. I don't know wrestling.
But he got a nice paycheck to form in front of the Saudi government, or as Ryan McKinnell, our partner here at the station, calls them blood merchants, but nevertheless, he got a nice paycheck.
Let's talk a little soccer, Jeff. What's happening this week?
Well, you can look for tonight. There's a U.S. soccer game. They're playing Cuba down in the Cayman Islands.
It's match
day 6 of 6 for the CONCACAF Nations League, and the U.S. is laying 3.5 goals.
Wow.
Total of 4.5 in the game, so they should be able to handle Cuba relatively easy, but if you want to sit back and watch hopefully the U.S. team improve a little bit and see some of the youngsters play. This would be a good spot.
What's the money line, about 2,300 or something?
There is none. It's such a big favorite.
Okay.
I was looking on the screen here and didn't see anything.
Yeah, when you get that high and you get up near $50, $100, we end up not putting one up at that and just having spread betting on it. So they're a 3.5-goal favorite, and winning or losing is not in the equation tonight.
There is one faraway place that did put up a money line tonight. 9,700 on Team USA. take back about 1,700 on Cuba.
Well, I think I might pass on that one. Jeff, great stuff as always. Appreciate it. Good rundown.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Sherman does a great job at Superbook USA. Stop down and say hello. So many fun things to do at Superbook USA. I mean, and you get food, you got the poker rooms right there, you've got other amusements, other ways to gamble, of course, being a casino. It's a great spot, and they did the overhaul a couple of years ago.
Beautiful.
Boy, I mean, it really is gorgeous.
It's roomy, it's big, a lot of space to move around, and also they probably put up about the most action in town on anything you want.
And I love their app. I really do.
It is an easy app to use.
It's so easy to negotiate.
I submit my Super Contest picks every week on that app.
Yep. Terrific app. If you don't have an account yet, by all means, it only takes like 10 minutes. And then you put your money in, and it's so much easier to play. And if you like to bet while the game's going on, the only way to do it is with the live betting option on the app. So get yours at Superbook USA. We'll come back with our Joe's Angle of the Day. And Wes and myself will look at some of tonight's action.
Hello, friends. This is Thomas Johnson from Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab. Need a great idea for lunch or dinner? Your best bet is Joe's, one of the most popular dining destinations on the Strip. Joe's provides the ideal setting for private parties with accommodations for up to 150 guests. Stop by to see us at the Forum Shops at Caesars and ask for Thomas Johnson, your maitre d'.
That break wasn't long enough. We have capriotis in here today and, you know, some pretty good sandwiches, but I'm still chewing. All right, the angle of the day. It involves the Tennessee Titans. This is kind of an oddball one, but these are fun. When they are off a win and the opponent is off a game where they allowed 370 or more yards, in that situation, the Titans are 0-23 against the spread. They beat Kansas City last week, and Jacksonville allowed 389 yards, I believe it was, in their game. So the Jaguars would be the play, as the Titans are 0-23 in this situation. Ralph Michaels compiles those trends. Some are great, some are fun. This would fall into the fun category. I would not recommend betting this game just on that trend, okay? But it's something you can use and have some fun with and trick your friends. Let's look at... let's go to the MAC doubleheader tonight, college football. MACtion on a Tuesday night. We have one game that is projected to be a blowout, and I find it difficult to argue with that, as Ohio takes on Bowling Green. And then what we'll call the Tuesday night main event in the MAC, as Eastern Michigan and Northern Illinois match up. We'll talk about the prelim first. Ohio is still capable of winning 6 games and getting bowl eligible. Whether they get a bowl bid or not remains to be seen, because they're going to be more, I think there's going to be more 6-win qualifiers this year than there are bowls, just based on we've had a lot of parity this year in the middle of the pack. So getting 6 might not get you to a bowl, but at least gets you eligible. So that's something to play for. Bowling Green, even if they have something to play for, is just awful. And the line's going all the way up to 20. I don't think I can lay 20, but there's not a chance in the world I play Bowling Green.
Yeah, after last week taking a nibble against Miami of Ohio, we know that they control their own destiny, but Miami of Ohio was in a total dead spot after winning at Ohio against Frank Solich and the Bobcats in the Battle for the Bricks, and you thought, okay, maybe this is kind of a sketchy spot for Miami. They're not a really great offense. Maybe Bowling Green can hang in the number, and they couldn't. And if they couldn't hang in, because Miami has a pretty anemic offense for a team that's going to probably be in the MAC title game
although
in Detroit.
They play very fast.
Yes.
So it's not a talented offense, but they play fast, and against the Bowling Green team, whose effort is questionable at this point, that might matter more than what we see tonight, because Ohio won't play at that at that same pace.
Yeah, I mean, if you made me, I would only take it because I don't want to lay these kind of points with Ohio. And we know that these lines do kind of get inflated a little bit when you've got a team that's in that must win in terms of getting bowl eligible. And it's inflated, certainly, for Ohio. Bowling Green's not going to go. But at 21, I would only take rather than lay.
Eastern Michigan and Northern Illinois. And these two teams also fit into that category of they're not going to get to the conference championship game, but they can still get bowl eligible, so the game has some importance. Northern Illinois, the favorite by a little bit at home. I don't have the number in front of me. It actually looks like a pretty good football game. I'm probably going to stay out of it. I made the number Northern Illinois 4. I think it's 5 now. And so it's right basically where it's supposed to be for me, and I really couldn't come up with a side. I think maybe my initial lean was Northern Illinois, but not enough for me to play it.
Yeah, and it's been kind of a roller coaster season for Eastern Michigan, who still needs one more to get bowl eligible. If you recall, they did beat Illinois, the bowl eligible Illini, in Champaign on a last second field goal, and then they had that crazy win on a blocked punt. They were playing Central Connecticut State in the FCS and got a blocked punt, basically blocked punt walk-off touchdown to win the game, and they also had a win over Western Michigan, and but they've been erratic. I mean, they have been very much up and down. Northern Illinois started off decent enough, but they've got a tougher path. They got to beat Eastern Michigan this week, and then they'll be a significant home underdog to Western Michigan next week. So,
and the game is going to mean something to Western Michigan.
Absolutely.
Because Central Michigan winning in dramatic comeback fashion on Saturday, if Western loses, Central Michigan can win the division outright.
Right.
Western would win the tiebreaker because they beat Central Michigan. But if Western were to lose that game next week, and they'll have gone a long time between games, by the way, they could actually lose the division. So that's going to be a big game for WMU, which probably is not a good thing for NIU.
And Eastern Michigan is the better side here. I would like to be getting a little bit more. That's where in-game wagering and live betting comes in. If I could get it at a touchdown, say Northern Illinois jumps out to the lead, that would be the side I would lean to, but nothing pre-flop for me.
I played a college basketball game tonight. I'm playing one or two a night as a rule. I'm a little upset with myself for not betting last night. I liked Utah State, but I was a bit worried about the spot against an 0-4 team and going off to play in one of those exotic tournaments in a nice little, and I could look at, they won by 32. Utah State's really good. I did decide to play tonight. Houston playing Rice, numbers about 12.5. I like this Cougars team a lot, and they're off a loss. Now, it doesn't automatically mean a team's going to come back and throttle a weaker opponent next time out. You saw what happened last night with the Kentucky Wildcats. They did not play that game, fortunately. The consensus was, well, Kentucky's going to be angry, and they're going to take it out on Utah Valley. They didn't. Okay, that was turned out to be a tough game for them. But I think Houston might be able to handle Rice. Rice is 4-1 so far, but they're not really very good. They're probably... Now, if you look at the KenPom, I think he's got them 167. Conference USA, as usual, isn't very good. It's not as bad as it is in football, but it's not a great conference. And I think the Cougars, in an intra-city battle, wearing the road jerseys, on a court where they probably will have a lot of support, maybe more support than the actual Rice followers, I think Houston comes to play tonight. And if they do, They can win this by 15 to 20.
And you're getting a Rice team. I mean, granted, the game was played on Saturday, so they've had 2 days in between. This Rice team was down 21 points with 12 minutes to go and at the Thunderdome against UC Santa Barbara and came all the way back. So is that going to carry momentum over to the next game, or is it going to zap their energy where they have completely come back? Because you get an angry Houston team off a home loss. And one thing I know about Houston and following Kelvin Sampson when he was at Indiana, he's always going to be a defense first coach, because the one thing that he always said that really stuck with me when he spoke to one of our gatherings when I was still at Indiana University was defense is just an attitude. I mean, it's not even as much about teaching it. It's about having an attitude and the willingness to play defense. And his teams typically do that. Yeah. So
and that's
I
why
could see that.
They'll probably exceed their rating like they did last year. You know, Houston was really good last year and showed it in the NCAA tournament. And I think KenPom has them 35. I think that they're going to be higher than that by season's end. I'm a big Sampson fan. I think he's a great basketball coach. And I fully expect Houston to have a real chance to be playing again in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, he gets the most out of his guys. And look, they play solid defense, and they're physical, and they don't back down. And there's a toughness about those teams that he had all the way back at Oklahoma, at Washington State, even some at Indiana before that went sideways. But I didn't play the game, but I would lean toward your side on Houston.
How about something you liked from tonight's college hoops?
Yeah, and I'm going to take a team that I think had some expectations that has kind of stubbed their toe out of the gate a little bit early. They did get a nice win on Saturday, but I'm going to look at the Davidson Wildcats. The line has moved a little bit. It's still 9. They're getting the Wolfpack in.
They got knocked around by Charlotte.
Yeah.
And by the way, Charlotte's an improved basketball team.
Yeah, Ron Sanchez, who was a former assistant under Tony Bennett, Charlotte got back-to-back wins over in-state schools.
They got a freshman point guard is good.
Beat Davidson and also beat Wake Forest. And Sanchez, I think, is trying to run a little bit of that pack line that he learned under Tony Bennett, slowing the tempo a little bit. But they've been a very much improved team. Davidson lost to Auburn. They played that neutral site game in Annapolis and then got beat by Charlotte by 13. I think Davidson was like a 10.5-point favorite in that game, because I remember taking Charlotte. But they get Reno in here, Reno going on the road for the first time. And look, you're going to see some ups and downs early as this backcourt, even though it's a veteran backcourt, has to learn to run this motion offense. Lost to Utah and then got 2 wins over LMU and UT Arlington. And then Andy Enfield finally able to beat Steve Alford when he doesn't have UCLA talent. Andy Enfield at USC can finally get Alford, who's really owned him in that rivalry.
I have long held this as an opinion. Doesn't mean it's fact. It's an opinion. I've never liked to go with programs who hire a coach moving down the ladder instead of up.
Right.
I don't like it at all in football, and I don't like it much in basketball either. And while Nevada's had great success the past couple of years, it's still a step down. It just is a step down the coaching ladder from UCLA. It's as simple as that. And I don't think Alford's nearly the coach Musselman was, and I don't think he's going to be able to recruit the same type of very athletic, gifted transfer that Musselman had success with. Musselman identified his type of players, brought him in, and we saw what the Wolfpack did. I'm not saying Nevada's going to sink back to the middle of the Mountain West Pack. Yeah, I am. Within a few years, that's where they'll be. I think he'll be exactly what he was at New Mexico, which was okay, but not great. And in big games, go against him.
Well, and this is the level, I think, probably where Steve could be. And I thought he was actually pretty darn good at New Mexico, by and large. I thought they made the NCAA tournament. They got 23, 24 wins. Now, you know, down in Albuquerque, those people for a long time, is a mid-major program with Final Four expectations. I mean, they really had a lot of expectations down there in New Mexico. And I think Steve, I think, is at the level really he should be, a high-quality higher mid-major, if that's what you want to label him as, that's not in the Power Five, where he can win his fair share of games. It'll be interesting to see how he recruits, if he goes the more high school route or if he embraces what Musselman did, which is getting transfers from high-major programs.
Well, he hasn't really gone that route. generally, right?
He's been a
high school recruiter.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been at places like Iowa and UCLA where you're able to recruit a decent talent, especially at UCLA.
Sure.
But I do kind of think my mild disagreement is I think he's kind of happy being here and away from all the BS you got to deal with at UCLA with a lot of high maintenance.
Well, I'll tell
recruits
you one thing. Look, if he thinks there's no pressure in Reno, he better think again. They expect to win up there now. I mean, it's not...
They've been winning since when Mark Fox was up there, who is now at Cal.
But and then they became a national player the last couple of years. You're taking over a program that the folks in Reno now have very high expectations for. And even this year's team, I know they lost a lot. They're not off to a great start. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. And remember this. He can have adversarial relationships with the media.
Oh, well, look at who he learned it from.
Yeah, but Bobby Knight could get away with it.
Yeah, when you win, yeah, you can absolutely get away with it. Interestingly enough, Bobby Knight now living back in Bloomington, Indiana.
Yeah.
And was at an IU event, not an official university event, but was at an event over the weekend. And I never thought I'd see him ever talk about Indiana publicly again. A lot of sore feelings there.
There you go. Anyway, I like your choice in that game tonight. We'll see what happens with that. We will take a break. We'll come back, and Marco D'Angelo will be joining us next. We'll do our Wager Talk marquee matchup of the night.
For more angles and information, follow Ralph Michaels at CalSportsLV on Twitter.
Hey, it's Dave Koken with John Lyons from Lyons Physical Therapy. So, car wrecks, very frequent in Las Vegas. Sometimes serious injuries, some not so serious, but... in a lot of cases, there has to be some kind of physical therapy after the accident. Talk about that.
Yes, Dave. We as physical therapists can assess all injuries after a car accident. Sometimes we're the first person to see a patient where we can identify the type of injuries the patient has. We will get them moving better, help reduce their pain, and we also work in conjunction with multiple physicians so these patients can be given appropriate medications to help with their pain, muscle spasms, and swelling. We can also provide any post-operative treatment in case these patients ever need surgery on their spine, their shoulders, and their knees.
LyonsPTLV.com, 702-476-0222.
What's hot today? It's time for the Wager Talk marquee matchup of the night with Marco D'Angelo. WagerTalk.com. Start winning now.
Marco D'Angelo joins us 4 days a week, at least three anyway, to do the Wager Talk marquee matchup. Today is one of those days. But this is a little bit out of the ordinary because tonight, Marco, and I know what you're playing here because I am on the same side, you are looking at an NHL game for the marquee matchup. And it is a good one, by the way, between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, Dave, I pick hockey about as often as you pick NBA games, and I'm putting my undefeated season on the line tonight. We've had one hockey player that I've given to my clients, and this one I'm giving to my clients tonight, too, and I'm giving it here as a freebie tonight, and that is Tampa Bay at St. Louis. And you know I love to do situational handicapping, Dave, and I think this is a great spot. We look at Tampa Bay, and they are a team that's playing well. They won three in a row, but they did lose their last game. But I look at that last game, and they lost it coming off a big 9-3 victory. That 9-3 victory, fat and sassy after a win like that. And then you had the defending champs on deck. And speaking of the defending champs, they're struggling right now. Offensively, they've scored three goals or less in four straight games in five of their last six. In fact, four of those five games, they scored two goals or less. So we got two teams, I feel, heading in opposite directions. And I also got to figure that Tampa, they did look ahead to this one because if you remember last year, Dave, Tampa had the best regular season record. Rolling into the playoffs, everybody was penciling them right into the Stanley Cup Finals, and oh, what happened? They lost, got swept in the first round of the playoffs. I think tonight, facing the defending champs, this is a spot where maybe they got something to prove or what might have, could have been type game. And I think you're going to get a really good effort out of Tampa tonight. And I got a little stat on Tampa, that last game that they lost. Well, going over the last two seasons, when Tampa has allowed four goals or more, in the next game. How about 27-7 in that following game? And that's where they're at tonight. I think Tampa at this price is an outstanding play.
For those who don't follow hockey as much, I'll use a baseball example. Way back when, the Oakland A's playing the Dodgers in the World Series, and the A's were clearly the best team in baseball. There was no question about it. And they're going to win the first game, and, you know, they're going to roll. And then Kirk Gibson hit the home run, and the A's were dead. They never recovered from it. Last year, Tampa Bay in Game 1 against Columbus in a series, a 1-versus-8 series, they had a 3-0 lead. People forget they had a 3-0 lead in that game and blew the game in spectacular fashion, and they just never recovered from it. This is still a really, really talented team. I think on paper, Tampa Bay is still the best team in the NHL. And on the Blues side, look, they're the defending Stanley Cup champs, so everybody wants a piece of them. They had an injury to Tarasenko, and like we see so often in other sports, and I know, Marco, you talk about this too, when a team loses its superstar, they'll very frequently galvanize and get really good, go on a good run for a while as if to prove to everybody that, hey, we can win without our best guy. Eventually, there's a regression. Tarasenko's still out, and so is Steen, one of the more valuable forwards. I think it's catching up with the Blues. I like your side here. I like the Lightning as well. Wes, you had your finger up. You wanted to play.
Well, make it 3-for-3 because I like Tampa Bay in this spot, too. And you, like you said about Tarasenko, they're starting to kind of feel the effects as these guys that aren't used to having to produce as much are now getting a little bit overwhelmed. And the Blues are going to do a lot of line changes tonight. They're going to move Bozak up from the third line to the first line with Shannon Schwartz. So they're going to be doing a lot of switching here with the Blues, and their special teams have been bad. They're 0-10 on the power play the last three games. So Tampa Bay, first of back-to-back here with the Blues and the Blackhawks. Usually that first game on the road trip, I often think, is where you have the most focus. So
especially when it's the better of the two teams.
Yeah, so I'm on your guys' side with the Lightning here.
All right, Marco, we all three of us like Lightning, so let's hope they get there. It's cheap enough. It's about roughly minus 120. I believe that's the last price I saw at the Westgate. Talk about what's happening at Wager Talk. I know it's $2 Tuesday.
It is $2 Tuesday, and you can check out our buddy Gianni. He's got VR, you may know him as well. He's got a play up tonight, just $2. He's been rolling in college basketball, and you can check that play out tonight. And obviously, we do it every Tuesday, and it's over at Sports Memo as well. We have a $2 capper. It's a great way to introduce yourself to the site if you've never been to Wager Talk or Sports Memo, or a good way to try a capper maybe that you haven't tried before. So check it out each and every Tuesday. And then, as you know, Dave, tomorrow's the one day I'm not on the show. Busy day tomorrow. We'll be in studio doing all those videos and the two Bet On It shows. So long day tomorrow, but you can look for all of that content up at Wager Talk tomorrow night.
I should mention, by the way, my college football continues to be very good, and they put a special offer for me today for the rest of the season. And we'll mention our friend Tony Finn, who is just, I mean, he is just crushing the National Football League. I think I did a show with the press this morning, and I think Tony's at 71% for the season in the NFL, which
it's been insane.
Incredible.
We should have had him in a super contest, huh?
Yeah, really. He'd be on top at 71%, although that's five games a week, obviously. But there's a special price up for Tony for the rest of his NFL season. So, I mean, if you're an NFL bettor and you want to get someone who's been really good in that league for a long time and is having a great season, check Tony Finn out at Wager Talk. Marco, I'll talk to you on Thursday.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Marco D'Angelo. Follow him on Twitter at Marco in Vegas. 71% this deep in the NFL season is that's pretty good.
It is. I'm just at this point, it's like I'm right around like 60% in both of my contests, and I'm like, I should be pleased with that.
Yeah, that's
but
good.
But it's like I'm not even close. I'm in the top 200, which unfortunately doesn't pay anything, but at least you get the satisfaction. And if you're betting those games and putting them in your pocket, then you're ahead of the game.
I think you'll have to be at, I'll say 63 to 64% to cash. Not to win, but to cash.
Right. Yeah, so, that would be my guess.
But don't have any bad weeks.
Exactly. It's like the 3-2 weeks, you don't make up any ground, but if you get a 2-3 or a 1-4, it's like you're done.
That's it. You're playing for peanuts at that point. All right, we will get to our Lions physical therapy play of the day.
It's the LPT play of the day. Tonight's best bet from Lions Physical Therapy. Your five-star rated specialists.
That they are. They are a five-star rated injury therapist, injury rehab, whatever the right terminology is. If you want to learn more, you can follow them on Twitter at LionsPTLV. The website is LionsPTLV.com. And hopefully you'll listen to the little, like these 30-second interviews that play throughout the show that I did with John Lyons, because it explains a lot about the company. They're really terrific people. And if you're in that situation and looking to get healthier, they're the people to contact, Lions Physical Therapy. So we have a consensus among the three of us, basically, because Marco has made this his marquee matchup, and Wes, you and I both like the same side as well. So let's go ahead with the Tampa Bay Lightning as short road favorites tonight against the St. Louis Blues, roughly 6-5, which is not a terrible price, and hopefully three heads are better than none here, and we come through with a win.
Show us your lightning bolts, Tampa Bay Lightning, unlike what the Chargers did last night.
That is for sure. Good show today. Fun stuff with Jeff Sherman from Superbook USA. You can make sure and follow Jeff on Twitter at Golf Odds. And Jeff always updates on a regular basis what the latest futures are in the various sports that they have up at Superbook USA. So it's, if you want to get current numbers on everything, Jeff is going to have them there. Thanks to Marco D'Angelo. Always a pleasure to talk with Marco. We'll be joined by Rob Vino tomorrow for the marquee matchup. Wes, I will see you tomorrow. Kenny White will be with us tomorrow as well, our Power Ratings and Projections Wednesday show.
Class will be in session.
There you go.
Mr. White on the air tomorrow.
Jared Justice, our producer. My name is Dave Koch, and thanks a lot for listening. Cofield & Company is coming up next right here on The Sports Leader. We hope you'll stick around for that. Good luck with your plays tonight. Hope you win them all.